Hi guys, this is Maggie, and you're listening to part two of our Star Trek Beyond episode. Make sure you listen to part one first. That's episode 20, Red Shirt, Dead Shirt. There are some spoilers for Star Trek 2009, both in that episode and in this episode. And if you like our show so far, we'd love for you to leave a review for us on iTunes. So that'd be super awesome. You can also, you know, email us about shows or films that you want us to talk about. So you can contact us via Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, or email at sfincolor@gmail.com.
We have our pairings now. We have Sulu and Uhura teaming up to get out and save the rest of the crew.
It was cool to see the two of them together.
Yeah. Our two POC ensemble members, yeah.
Let's just get them out of the way so everyone else can do stuff.
Sad. So I don't know which group we should start off with. I don't know if we should just kind of follow one particular group. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on.
There is.
A lot of stuff going on.
What are the things you really want to hit? Who's most interesting to you?
I guess we'll start off with Scotty. I feel like Scotty's thing was pretty self-explanatory. Scotty lands. He gets out of the ship. We talked about how Danny Pudi and some other guy try to attack him. But it doesn't quite work because J-Lo appears. She has this weird, illusion cloning device thing.
That's not going to come back like again.
Attacking. Yeah. So it seems she's like, you know, she's everywhere, but she's not. It kind of reminded me of Loki a little bit in the Avenger films. So she's attacking them, and she gets them to stand down and leave. Scotty gets a lot to do in this film. He got a lot to do in the previous film, too, the Into Darkness film. I think, you know, part of it's definitely because Simon Pegg wrote the dang thing. But, I mean, it works. I liked how Scotty was used in the film. I thought, you know, he is the comic relief character. He was used well. I think Scotty and J-Lo have a good rapport. So we find out more information about J-Lo, who she is, what she's doing here. OMG, she has a ship. And it's a Federation ship.
OMG.
Oh my gosh. This is great. Now we know how we're going to get home. I don't know what I was expecting, but I was definitely not expecting Fight the Power. But it was awesome.
Yeah.
I was pretty thrilled. The other film that has Fight the Power in it that's blasting and is awesome is Do the Right Thing by Spike Lee, which you should watch if you haven't seen it because it's a good film. Fight the Power is blasting, and we gotta figure out how to make the USS Franklin fly so our heroes can get home and save the day.
Yeah, that's gonna be a technical answer that I wouldn't be able to figure out on my own.
Yeah. So fun fact, the ship is, I was trying to figure out if it was named after anything in the original show, but it's actually named after Justin Lin's father, Frank Lin.
Oh my god.
Which is super cute.
That's awesome.
So in keeping with the whole tradition of naming things after people's ancestors, like the Kelvin ship was named after J.J. Abrams' grandfather, I believe.
That's nice.
Something like that. And they actually refer to the pod, the escape pods, as Kelvin pods.
Oh.
Which is a nod to the events of 2009 where, you know, the USS Kelvin was a ship that was destroyed, right?
Yeah.
That George Kirk was piloting. It's kind of nice. I thought it was a cute touch that he named the ship Franklin. That's, like, super adorable.
Yeah, that's cute.
And you could just tell, with this film, you could just tell that the people who directed it and wrote it, like, were real Trekkies.
Yes.
Sorry, JJ, but it was like a film by Trekkies.
Yeah, it knew its audience very well.
Yeah, like Justin Lin actually used to watch Star Trek with his family and his dad and everyone, like when he was a kid. Peg was a fan. Doug Jung was a fan. Like, it just comes out more that this is more, it's a more Trek film because it was made by more, like I guess, truer fans. No offense to the previous guys, but it's just more of a Trek film.
No, it definitely is.
So we we figure out, okay, we have a ship. Now we got to get people on the ship. So then we have the rest of our heroes are kind of scattered around. I guess. Oh, what did you think of? Well, two things. First of all, I keep talking about George Kirk, but I have neglected to mention George Kirk is played by Chris Hemsworth, who is Thor and looks like you would not recognize him at all if you compared his 2009 self to his Thor self.
So like, true. So it's like the mask is
cut in half, man. It's like scary. Which I don't know. I thought he did a pretty good job as George Kirk.
I thought so as well.
Apparently,
I heard that. That's very interesting and a little scary. I don't
know what that means. Is going to be some weird Hamlet stuff or like Simba? Like, I don't even know, man. Like,
remember who you are.
Yeah, like, I don't know what they're going to do with him. And it must be pretty expensive to have him come back.
You would think so, because, you know, like, that's not what you want to happen to your super, super low star, you know, to completely...
Yeah.
Take off.
I don't know why they're bringing him back. Maybe they just, I don't know. I guess it's just.
But, you know, you don't necessarily know, like, the size of his role either, you know?
Yeah. It's probably just going to be a cameo. Because I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know how they would bring him back as, like, a full character. That doesn't make any sense. Unless we do time travel, which is, like, we continue this weird trend where we are kind of pseudo copying, like, the old films or something. I think if I remember correctly, the fourth Star Trek film, they go back in time to save the whales, which is exactly as ridiculous as it sounds.
We've talked about that before.
Save the whales. Yeah, we probably did. That was a fun movie. Anyway, so yeah, Scotty's with Jayla. They're figuring stuff out. Do you ship it? And do you like Jayla's design?
Love her design. So cool looking. Never got tired of it throughout the whole thing. Really, it was just really good.
Do you ship her with Scotty?
I was so glad that they never developed, like, beyond, like, friendship. Because, like, stay friendship level, I do not ship it.
Do you? Okay. I could. I'm not, like, Spock and Uhura level shipping, but, like, I could. Maybe ship it with some convincing.
I just
like it.
I like it much better platonically, and it felt kind of more like. I don't know if there is a large age gap, but it felt like their relationship was more like older brother mentor? Kind of
like mentor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Personally,
I mean, he keeps calling her Lassie, so like that's
Lassie. Lassie is a dog.
I knew you were gonna say that. Why are you so predictable? Anyway, so yeah, we have a ship. Now we gotta get people on the ship. So let's see. I feel like Spock and Bones, they have a lot of interactions, but they don't have much to do.
No, I completely agree. Makes any sense. In terms of like plot, since they don't have a lot to do. Though there definitely is some, like, character Spockiness.
There's a lot of character stuff going on with him, which is nice.
Like, you know, he has to kind of come to the realization of, like, where his place is and what he needs to do with his life. But, yeah, in terms of actually developing, no, not really anything happens.
Yeah, that's the thing I really liked. I really liked, again, they kept going back to the 2009 film, but in a way that worked. Like, these characters don't forget what happened to them a couple of years ago. Like,
they shouldn't.
It's still relevant, you know? Like, Vulcan is still reeling from basically a Holocaust. And then, like, that has repercussions because, like, Spock has his duty to, like, you know, repopulate the Vulcan population.
Hell yeah. That's
kind of at odds with, like, everything else, like, his career and his romantic situation. And then, you know, the whole passing of Spock Prime has, you know, led to a lot of emotional stuff coming out with him. Bones is kind of like, wow, I didn't even know you were a person until, like, this movie.
Neither did we.
Neither did we. I mean... There's so much great comedy and humor with their interactions. And Bones has a lot more to do. Like, later on we get him, you know, piloting that little mini ship. We don't get, like, a lot of action, but it's a nice... It's, like, nice that he doesn't have to just be the doctor or the medic the whole time, you know?
Yeah, especially, yeah, I mean, he's unwilling, but he doesn't.
But that's Bones for you. He's just, like, a crotchety old man who's like, what is this newfangled technology, like, transporters and this and that and blah. I mean, I was laughing because in the original TV show, McCoy really hates and distrusts transporters. I think they briefly alluded to that in the 2009 film, but, like, when he got transported in this film and was like, oh, did things get, like, mixed up inside my body? Not verbatim, but something like along those lines. I was just like, these people really know their Star Trek, and I appreciate it. So, yeah, they're kind of on their own. Spock is wounded, and they're talking about all this philosophical stuff.
Yeah, it was almost like a character study, honestly.
It was a character study, yeah, and it was nice. And I mean, again, so many great comedy moments, especially with, like, Spock, like, laughing deliriously.
That was pretty good.
We're just like, oh, he's human. And then we're like, oh, wait, no. No. Like, he's, like, gravely injured. This is bad. We get some more plot stuff with them. Like,
his injury gives us an excuse to see a more vulnerable, more human side of him.
Yeah.
So, like, definitely. Even though he was injured, I was kind of like, yay.
Yeah. It was kind of like that TOS episode, The Naked Time, when everyone gets afflicted with that, like, that disease or sickness or whatever, that, like, people don't have inhibitions, and it's, like, Spock is just literally, a mess. Like, he's, like, crying and, like, being really angsty, and you're just like, snap out of it, Spock! Get your life together, man! Yeah, it's nice to see his more human side, because even though he is 50% human, it doesn't really feel like it most of the time.
Yeah.
It feels, like, more often than not, he feels more Vulcan.
At least that's what he shows,
anything else. Yeah, because, like, that's kind of, like, how he's chosen to be, personality-wise.
Personality-wise, but in terms of, like, his duty, he's kind of just ignoring that. So it's kind of an interesting mix.
Could you
because,
like explain further?
Duty to, you know, his people would be to go home and reproduce. But he's completely ignoring that in favor of doing something much more human, I guess, and exploring and seeing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because there's definitely, like, a weird dichotomy.
I love the word dichotomy. I use it a lot.
I know. I try to use it whenever I can.
It makes you feel really smart.
There's a weird dichotomy going on with Spock, but that's kind of, like, his whole life, I guess. It'd be really funny if they brought, like, T'Pring back in the next movie. I would pay good money to see Uhura fight T'Pring. That would be some good stuff.
Who's
right
that?
There. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but that'd be pretty funny.
Who's that?
T'Pring is basically, in the original series,
girlfriend.
Spock was, like, betrothed to this other Vulcan. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, some conflict there because... fun fact, this would be funny if they ever had this in the films. Vulcans go through this weird mating season thing called, like, Ponfar.
Okay.
It's like every 7 years or something, they either have to mate or they go into some kind of crazy rage mode or something.
This feels very 60s.
Yes. So, yeah, he's supposed to, like, I guess, mate with T'Pring since he's betrothed to her or something. They were betrothed as children, which is, like, another weird thing, but it was the 60s. I don't even know. So that was a whole thing. That would be real.
I feel like you really can't
do that in the film because it's completely ridiculous. It doesn't have any place in anything, but it'd still be pretty funny. So anyway. Back to this. So, yeah, Spock is injured. We got to get him to some good medical supplies, which, thankfully, later on, they get beamed aboard the Franklin, and that can happen.
Yep.
Meanwhile,
otherwise, dead.
What else is happening? Yeah, I'm sorry, we're, like, skipping all around. We have Kirk and Chekhov. They need to retrieve the artifact because, I mean, during the whole crash and burn of the Enterprise sequence, like, the artifact is kind of switching hands a lot and bouncing around all over the ship. We don't really find out where it is until much later.
Yeah.
It was actually the whole thing was just a psych out, like elaborate psych out that Kirk planned to capture or whatever, figure out if Kalara was lying to them. But we go back to the Enterprise, which is just a sad, burned shell of its former
self.
Don't
worry, it's gonna get worse.
And we find out, oh no, she was totally lying and betraying.
Who's surprised? Literally no one.
Fun
fact.
I couldn't
find anyone else online who thought what I did, but I thought that she looked like Taylor Swift.
What? Maybe the eyes.
No, don't.
Maybe.
Kind of like the ridges kind of that were kind of hair-like and just the shape of the face. I thought she looked very much like Taylor Swift.
I'd have to look at a picture of her again, but I know she's played by a white woman, so, I mean, maybe.
Taylor Swift.
I don't know, man.
I'm not saying she is. I'm just saying every time she was on screen, I was just like, oh my god, it's Taylor Swift.
That's funny, what with all the controversy lately about Taylor being a quote-unquote snake and all that stuff.
Mm.
Betrayal everywhere.
What side are you on,
anyway.
Maggie?
Hmm?
Are you Kim?
Well, are you scared of Taylor's legal team?
No, I'm a little. But what side are you on? Are you Team Taylor or Team Kim?
I definitely don't think anyone looks good coming out of the situation.
That was a very diplomatic answer, and I actually kind of agree.
I mean, I definitely don't like Taylor Swift after this, but I don't like the whole famous video and song. I think the video is kind of gross.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is neither here nor there.
Is it?
I
mean, Taylor Swift was in this movie, so.
Well.
When you put it that way.
Maybe she had a pseudonym and was part of Rihanna's Sledgehammer song and we just don't know about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm referencing a whole nother scandal with her. But anyway, so we find out, this alien has been lying. Kel Supreme.
Wow, I'm so surprised.
Were
you surprised?
Chekhov has got...
Were you surprised?
Not really. I mean, once the ship got attacked, I was like, there's no way this is a coincidence.
So true.
Something is afoot.
Did you believe her story? That was, she was like, I have to save my crew.
I mean, I thought that might be possible. I mean, it definitely ties in with the larger theme about being a leader that's prevalent through this film.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was possible, but I was just like, I don't know if I can trust you because you lied about the other stuff. So, whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we find out she's a traitor. She alerts Krall to their location, which is the Enterprise, which they already know where that is, so that's great. But... whatever,
really?
They manage to escape and blow stuff up, and Kalara gets crushed by Enterprise, which is, I guess, a very satisfying way to kill off a villain who destroyed the ship, sort of, or was kind of responsible for destroying the ship.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really... We never really find out what her deal is, though.
Yeah, we never find out what's going on with her.
Someone who, like, lied about having, like, a sob story, we never find out what her real story is.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't doubt that, you know, I mean, it looks like everyone who lands on that ship, on that planet, rather, he gets trapped by Krall, and then he kind of either kills them or uses them or something, so I'm sure she was a legitimate prisoner and was trying to find some way to escape or not die or something. So yeah, who knows what's going on with
her. Poor Taylor.
She's clearly not, like, here's the thing, right? With Krall, I was trying to figure out what was going on with him, right? I think it was supposed to be, like, he crashed on the planet, and there were some other people with him who were also alive. I don't know if I think they ended up being his, like, cronies.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many of them. I think, and this is really from more, like, stuff I read after. Not really stuff I saw in the movie, but I think allegedly it was supposed to be, like, he had one female and one male, like, crony, who was actually part of his original crew that was from, like, the Franklin. Mm-hmm. But then I think the rest of the people were just kind of random aliens from all over the place. Because I don't think Kalara was one of the original crew members, because she speaks a completely different language. that no one knows.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's,
you know, more background knowledge. It's very ambiguous.
We really just don't get that much background on the villains, you know?
Yeah, it would have been really helpful to have more knowledge about any of that. I mean, there was one moment, I don't know if you remember, but it was like one Krall and a crony, and they were separating to go fight. And like, there was like hesitation. Like, it's like, I don't think they say like, be careful, but like, it was kind of that intention there.
I think it was Manus, whatever his name is. Because he's like the only one who's named, I think.
It must be him. But like, it was a very weird, out of place moment because you don't really get anything else from either of them.
It's really strange because we don't know what's going on with the relationship. Yeah, it's funny because I definitely feel like I keep scratching and I know it's going to end up in the audio. It's not
I can't sit still. I'm fidgeting like crazy.
I know, like, the thinking about the 2009 film, people weren't too crazy about Nero as a villain, but like, at least we got to know.
I liked him.
Who he was and what he was.
I mean, he didn't fiddle when Rome burned, but you know, he was fine.
And, you know, like, we get a sense that A.L. is his, like, second-in-command and, like, loyal and stuff. We get more from those villains. But, yeah, this is just, it was weird. Like, I don't really know what to, I mean, Krall's definitely evil and crazy. But, like, beyond that, we don't really get much
from When did him, you figure you know? Out who, like, he was?
Okay, so I definitely didn't think he was going to be a human captain, but that is such a Star Trek thing to do. That's like, you do not get much more Star Trek than that. Like, a previous captain being the enemy. That was like the pilot episode, guys.
Pilot?
That happened in the pilot. Yeah, the pilot for Star Trek is called The Menagerie. There's a part one and a part two. Chris Pike is in it, or Christopher Pike is in it, and he... If you remember, he... Oh, spoiler alert. I don't know. Are you? Do you care about Into Darkness spoilers?
No.
Okay. Chris Pike, Christopher Pike, if you remember, he was the original captain of the Enterprise in the 2009 film before Kirk takes over. And he later dies because the father must always die. He dies in Into Darkness. So, like, in the original Star Trek, Christopher Pike was a captain who, like, later turned... Oh, no, did he turn? I think he did. But anyway, there's a bunch of episodes in pilot... I'm trying to remember if the... Sorry, I'm getting really mixed up with my Star Trek mythology, because I can't remember if the Menagerie was a pilot. I think it was. But there was also another... There was another episode that might have been a pilot. I don't think they had, like, two pilots or something, but there was another one where a captain called Gary Mitchell
becomes
like an evil
Gary Mitchell.
Yeah, he has like such a boring name. There's another evil, like, captain turned evil antagonist character in like one of the early episodes and or pilots. And his name is Gary Mitchell, and he becomes this kind of like omniscient evil character that is attacking the Enterprise. And I think he went to school with Kirk or something, or he went to the academy with Kirk, and they used to be best bud, but then, you know, he turned evil.
The best friend must
Kirk
turn evil.
Kirk has to kill him and stuff. So, yeah, that happened. So, yeah, the whole thing of, like, a captain, sorry for the scratching, guys, it's, like, really, really hot and humid in my room, and I cannot turn on a fan or the AC, so I apologize. Anyway, so the whole... Oh, this person used to be a Starfleet captain and now he's evil is like, it's been done a lot. And again, very Star Trek move. But I never anticipated that to be the case.
I did.
Like, yeah, I guess in hindsight, it should have been pretty obvious.
I don't know when exactly I figured it out. I didn't know that he'd be like the captain, but I knew like, I figured that he would be someone from the old ship.
It was subtle but definitely obvious once Kirk switched the channel on the little TV screen and it started playing a clip of the crew. I was like, that's gonna be important to the plot, like it's gonna come back, but I didn't know how, you know. But
I mean,
once that TV started playing like old crew members of the ship, I was like, something's going on here. Yeah.
I mean, the annoying part is that, like, yeah, I figured that part of it out, but beyond that, you still don't really get a lot of answers about, like, how that's possible. No. You know what I mean?
How what is possible?
Like, how everything went down, you know, what, 100 years before.
Yeah, from what I gathered from either watching it or trying to read other people's reactions to it after the fact, this is the timeline that I kind of have in my head. So they enter the nebula, and as we know already, based on the previous, like the first part of the movie, that nebula, you can't transmit in or out.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like a dead zone. So they go into the nebula.
I know a lot about that. I have
they
AT&T.
Crash. They get stuck on the planet, and there's no way for the remaining crew members to survive. The only way for them to survive is they have technology. These weird, I guess he doesn't need to refer to them as nanomachines or something. But they have the weird drone things that apparently Krall can order around. But he's able to actually mutate and steal people's powers or life source to, like, keep himself alive. So that's why the whole thing with him, you know how he mutates throughout the film?
Yeah.
Because he's stealing people's life force to stay alive, and, like, he discovered the technology, and that's how he used it to stay alive for hundreds of years, or 800 years, or 100 years or something. The whole thing was he was just, like, angry and disillusioned, right? Because he was a soldier, and then they kind of made him a captain, which I guess it's like pseudo military. It's not really about fighting.
No, it's not
more about,
really.
It's not. It's more about exploring and being diplomatic. So then he becomes disillusioned, and then once he crashes on this planet, he's even more disillusioned and mad and feels betrayed by the Federation because they're never going to come back for him and get him. So he's become this crazy rage monster of insanity or something.
But
I'm not saying that's a very great villain or a great storyline, but that's how I understand it.
But, like, how did everything go down with the crew?
I think most of the crew died.
Like, when they crashed?
Oh, you mean, like, where are the bodies or something?
When they crashed?
Yeah, what I assume was they crashed on the planet. Most of them died because it's one of the older ships, so they don't have anything. Most of them died. The people who, I think it was two people plus Edison who survived. They survived by, like, mutating their bodies and stuff.
I don't know if I buy that. Like, only three people survived, and, like,
or you can surmise that they crashed, and then Edison ends up killing other people and stealing the life power to survive. But I don't know. We never find out.
Yeah, we can conjecture all we want. But
yeah, it's all conjecturing and weirdness.
Right, and
sorry that I keep, like, scratching. I really apologize, guys. It's just, this weather is really bad for my skin, and it's very uncomfortable right now.
Sorry.
I should probably drink some more water.
Do you want to take a break?
Take
a break?
I think I'm good. You can just talk about, do you want to talk a little bit about,
anything?
But we were on the topic of, I don't know, do you have any thoughts you want to add? Because I've been talking for a while.
No, but I'll think of something. I always seem to.
But yeah, so so let's see. Kirk and Chekhov, they figure out that, Kalara was lying to them. She ends up dying later on, and let's see, what else? Oh, they're trying to figure out how to find the other crew members, right? Because that was another reason they went to the Enterprise. They were trying to scan
for the
other crew, but they couldn't get it to work.
But
they're wandering around. They get caught in one of Jayla's traps, so they end up being reunited with Jayla and Scotty, and then they end up beaming Spock and Bones to the ship. So part of the team is together, but not all the team, because Uhura and Sulu are still trapped on Krall's base. So they're kind of in prison. Keenstra helps them get out. They're trying to figure out what's going on. They're sneaking around. They try to send out a distress signal, but it doesn't work. And yeah, Ahura, I feel like she just, even though she's not as action-y as, say, maybe the last movie, she gets a lot to do. She finds out that, I don't know, we finally see that Krall is the one who, whatever, sucks the life force out of people.
It's disturbing.
And is, yeah, disturbing and torturing and killing the other crew members on the, from the Enterprise. Can I say, one, I really liked that quarry they were in for the base.
Yeah.
With all the blue rocks, like, it really took me back to 60s Star Trek. Like, yeah. It really looked like one of the old sets, and I don't know if that was intentional.
It probably was.
It probably was, but it looked very, very old school. Even though I know it was a real quarry, but it just looked really cool. And I liked seeing, like, all the different colored uniformed people kind of walking down the mountains or through that weird little cave area. It was just, like, kind of cool. It really brought me back to, like, old Trek, which was nice.
It kind of reminded me of, like, the Lord of the Rings films, like, visually, like, in the underground segments. Because it's really dark and dank and...
Because a villain ship has to be dark and dank. Indeed. Clearly.
Shins.
Only the dankest of memes are allowed on a villain ship. Anyway, so... they're on the ship. Not the ship. They're trapped in those prisons. They get out. They try to send the distress signal. It doesn't work. Surprise.
And, you are a failure.
Krall shows them that he can suck the life force out of people, which is terrifying and great. I don't know about Ahura, but if I was her, I'd probably have PTSD by the end of this movie, because the stuff that she saw in this movie, I still freak out whenever I think about that poor, crab head lady getting, like, blasted to smithereens in that little room. Anyway, so...
Gross.
He's like, you guys are not, you know, united and blah, 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 because he threatens them. And then, oh, hey, we found out that the ensign that Kirk talked to earlier in the film has been hiding the artifact in her hair, or whatever you want to call it, the entire time. That was definitely a shout out to Alien if I've ever seen one. Her head.
Oh, yeah.
With the weird, like, crab legs coming out, like... It was definitely a throwback to the Alien film from, like, 1979 or whatever date it was, which is also an excellent sci-fi film. You should watch it.
I have not.
You should. I mean, it's definitely horror, but it's, like, still good. Anyway, so throwback to Alien, probably, possibly. Now it's time for Krall to take revenge, because he ends up killing her in that room with the device. A lot of similarities to 2009 film. Like, I don't know what's going on. Maybe they're just kind of running on, I don't know. Like, because, like, the whole, I mean, I guess you could call it a MacGuffin, you know? Yeah. But having one device that will... destroy everything. In this case, it was more of a bioweapon, so it would just kill organic matter, and I guess that includes clothing as well. But clothing and biological matter, it kills or destroys or eats whatever, all that. I don't even know how the heck Krall got his hands on such a device.
Yeah, they don't really answer but again, any of that, or they don't.
That's one thing I don't know. It's like the Quinn from Into the Badlands problem, right? Like, the reason that they're evil is because they're insane. But then that's not satisfying, because, like...
Yeah.
Okay, you're just doing stuff because you're insane.
Yeah, that's,
okay.
Like, the stupidest excuse there is, because, like, everyone's crazy. Nah. But, like, you know what I mean. It's nothing...
Yeah, it's, like, that's, like, just such a cop-out.
Yeah,
like,
give me a reason. I want to know about their childhood.
To be fair... Crawl does have a reason. It's just stupid. Like a completely convoluted, crazy reason.
Yeah, like you should be able to, you should be able to explain it in like less than 10 words.
Only saying humans are the only things that matter. I think that's his mantra. But I don't know. I'm just kind of making that up.
Yeah, you know? They don't really say that exactly. They don't.
It was very nebulous.
Fighting is good. Peace is bad.
War is his resting state. Oh, man. Lots of people die in front of Uhura, and I'm just like, girl, you gotta get yourself to counseling after this, because I would not. I don't know how anyone could be okay with seeing one of their fellow crew members, like, just die in front of them like that in such a horrifying way.
I mean, yeah, it calls back to stuff that's happened in the past, but, like, only convenient stuff. Though, I will say...
Yeah, it just reminded me of, like, Nero's, like, little red blob of death from, like, the first film.
I will say, though, that one of the really interesting things that the Avengers did was that, like, they called back to, like, Tony Stark's mental state. Like, especially in, like, Iron Man 3, where, like, he's been through some real, like, crap. And, like, he ain't doing so hot up there.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. You don't really see that. I haven't
seen any of the other... I've only seen the first Iron Man.
Don't make an effort. It's not worth it. But that was one good aspect of it.
Yeah, I heard those movies got ruined by them trying to be too international with them, too. But, meh. Hollywood.
The Hollywood elite.
So, yeah. Let's see. So, you know, Uhura and Sulu are trying to break out, but they keep getting stopped. And Krall is kind of using the fact that they care about their fellow crew members as leverage to terrorize them and all that. So
they don't really get that much more to do, really.
Then we get a plan.
I do like plans.
The others, who are on the USS Franklin, and they are going to save the day. They're going to warp their crew members onto the Franklin. What are you doing, even? Oh my god, is that scissor in your hair? Oh, no, it's a clip. Okay. I thought it was a scissor that you were playing with.
I was before.
They're going to warp everyone onto the Franklin, and then they're going to... Oh, what? Hold up. Break it down. There's actually some plot stuff going on with Uhura and Sulu, because they figure out that Krall has been, you know, watching them the entire time, and he's planning on attacking Yorktown. So, anyway, the rest of the, I guess, ensemble who are on the USS Franklin, they're trying to locate their crew members. We have a hilarious bit with Spock and a tracking necklace. That's fantastic. That was
really good.
That just the look on his face. When McCoy's like, so you gave your girlfriend a tracking device, and he's just like, all the emotions conflicting on his face were just so great.
It was really good. Because, like, that could have been, like, played so creepily. And I was like, I'm glad it's not.
That was not my intention. And then, so they have a plan. They gotta go make a distraction. They gotta swoop in, save the day, get the crew on board, go to Yorktown, warn them, and get rid of Krall. Yay, we have a mission now.
That was one of the things I really liked about this, is that, like, it was very straightforward in terms of this, then this, then that. I mean, the only moment where you don't really get that as much is you know, when they first kind of arrive on the planet and everyone's like, what now?
Well, they're all trying to survive and find each other,
basically. What comes next, you know?
Yeah. So, we got a ship. We got part of a crew. Now we need to get the rest of the crew. So they have a plan. Naturally, they got to use a motorcycle because... Reasons. Call back to 2009 film, Kirk rides a motorcycle because he's cool.
All cool people do. That's like a law.
A J law. Can I just say, I know... I know the movies didn't come out that long ago, but I really like Kirk's hair in this film. Like, it just feels more mature than, like, say, the 2009 film. I guess it was more, like, it's just a weird comment that I'm talking about his hair. But, like, I mean,
no, I know.
Like,
if you
look at pictures of what he looked like in the original film. No, I thought it was good,
too.
I don't know. It's a good look. And also, he just looks more grown up and older. And that makes sense. What are you doing? What are you doing?
I put a USB in my hair.
You're weird. Okay. Well, you're like the crab lady, yes, from the movie. You can just hide stuff in your head.
Well, my hair is very thick, so I can actually.
Yeah, I don't think Krall would ever be able to find that USB.
I don't think so. Look, now it's gone.
Anyway, if we were in a cartoon, your hair would be like a hyper, like a pocket dimension or something.
Yeah.
You just like store That'd stuff really in there. Helpful. If you need it, you just pull it out. Anyway, so yeah, so we have to get the crew back together. They come up with a plan. Jayla's reluctant, and
she gets talked into it.
Yeah, I mean, again, we kind of get back to the whole family and Enterprise is a family. We don't leave people behind and all that good stuff.
But the other side of it is that Jayla, you know, lost
Jayla is Rey
because of Jayla what happened. What?
Jayla is
no,
Rey.
She is. She's like, I'm team Jayla.
But she's basically Rey.
Yeah.
From like The Force Awakens. So yeah, she's like, well, my father was brave and he died. And Scotty's like, you know what? We don't leave people behind. We're a family. We're a team. We're a crew. We're not.
She gets bullied into it.
Basically. But she's like, you know, these guys can get me off planet. And that's what I want.
You give me what I want, I give you what you want.
Deal. So they end up, they land at Krall's base. There's some weird, wonky CGI stuff going on. I know people were talking about how they weren't crazy about the CGI, and I think the main part where it stands out that the CGI wasn't very good was the shot where Kirk and Jayla are riding over the rocks, and then there's like an overhead shot. The CGI looked pretty bad, dude.
Yeah.
It looked pretty bad. Other than that, that was the only issue I had with the CGI. I don't know if other people had issues with the CGI, but that was my only gripe with it. Also, I was like, how is this even working? Because that cliff literally leads to nothing. Like, isn't he gonna die? But whatever. Sci-fi, suspend your disbelief. Okay, so we're back. We kind of took a break because reasons.
Somebody had family.
I had a more wittier response for that I thought up like hours ago, but it's already gone, so I don't.
That's
even
okay.
Know
it doesn't. It literally. It does not matter.
Time travel.
That's basically what we did. I'm so anyway. Glad you got to join us on this little adventure of ours. Please come back next week, where we'll be going on another adventure.
Well, we're probably going to be continuing Sensei, but actually, no. This is probably going to be part two. So, unfortunately, the chop yet another movie. In half.
I love
because
Chopped.
I was just looking at the TV Tropes page for Chopped. I didn't get to the bottom of the TV Tropes page, but I was reading some of the tropes that are apparent on the show.
There are a lot. It's funny.
There are so many. Anyway, okay. So if I remember correctly, when we paused, we were talking about Kirk going to rescue the rest of his crew. But before that, while we were on break, I did a little bit of research.
I'm here.
So, a couple things.
Listen.
Hmm?
Sorry, I'm just being creepy.
I don't even know what you were saying, dude. I just heard you whispering and being weird. I'm sure I'll hear it later when I edit it. okay, so earlier I mentioned that this kind of theme of renegade captains or captains that are kind of dissatisfied with like how their missions are going or how routine they've become, this theme has been expressed before in the original Star Trek series. So I think I mentioned Christopher Pike and I also mentioned Gary Mitchell. So to clarify and correct some of the stuff I said before. So, Star Trek, the original TV show, had two pilots. Let me see. I have the names up on my browser. They had two pilots. One pilot was called The Cage, and then the other pilot was called Where No Man Has Gone Before. So, The Cage features Christopher Pike, and Where No Man Has Gone Before features Gary Mitchell and another character named Elizabeth Denner. So I think the cage is weird because they turned it into a two-parter later on in the first season or something. It was weird like that. I think they turned the cage into a one part of a two-parter or something. But anyway, so I was incorrect. Christopher Pike did not become a renegade captain or anything. But Christopher Pike did have a lot of stuff where he was dissatisfied with kind of being a captain. I have a quote right here from the cage. So this is Christopher Pike. "I'm tired of being responsible for 203 lives. I'm tired of deciding which mission is too risky and which isn't, and who's going to the landing party and who doesn't, and who lives and who dies." So we kind of get this kind of heavy kind of who am I to kind of decide who lives and dies, captain.
Who tells your story?
Hmm?
Hamilton reference. Just ignore me.
Stop.
That's
anyway,
what I'm here for.
But you see what I mean, right, Melissa? This is definitely kind of parallels.
Yeah.
To some extent.
There was actually a moment in this film where I really thought that they were going to go down a different road.
Hmm. Okay.
So when the Enterprise comes out of the nebula and before they get attacked by all of the drones, whatever.
The bees, the drones, the whatevers.
Yeah, whatever. I can't remember who says it, but somebody basically is like, "Hey, you want to turn around?" And Kirk is like, "Nah." Do you remember what I'm talking about? I'm not saying it verbatim, obviously, but there's a moment where Kirk decides not to do something. Do you know at all what I'm talking about?
I do not. I'm trying to think because I did see it twice.
So you should have a better recollection. but regardless.
That sounds possible though, yeah.
It's a very quick moment.
Okay.
And they just never really go back to it. But when I first watched it, what I was thinking was that, essentially Kirk could have gotten out of the situation if he had moved faster or if he had done basically his duties better, and then they wouldn't be kind of be in this mess, nobody would have died, etc., etc. And so I kind of thought that they were going to explore that rabbit hole, where he was going to be doubting himself and stuff like that, but they never really did that, and they never really expressed that beyond more of a split second.
Yeah, hold on. Let me see what. Let me look at the wiki real quick because I don't.
Wiki.
I know.
Wow.
Let's see. Yeah, I mean the wiki is pretty general, so I don't think it's going to give me any answers. But I don't remember that happening.
Huh. Or it's somebody's asking what do we do, and he gives a certain response.
Well, I just don't think that, even if that was the case, I feel like that's not, I feel like it's not even, relevant to the plot or the themes of the movie, because it doesn't seem to make sense to me that Kirk would be punished for not acting quickly enough.
Not punished, internally conflicted. It would go along with the same themes of whether he could be as good as his father and whether he would be making the right calls in times of crisis. It's all about learning to trust himself and believing that he could be his own man.
Yeah. In New York you can be. Anyway, I'm gonna stop myself right now.
Who did it now, okay?
But yeah, I feel like I'm starting to remember that
It's like one line and it's
it was a
quick
exchange
thing, but they just never
again, but I see what you mean, and I feel like I keep thinking of scenes from the first one, the 2009 one, and I'm just it's just meshing too much right now and I just can't remember. But I think it's definitely possible. I feel like I got a sense of that whole, pausing and, him being his father when he decides to, He decides to, what's the word?
Save.
No.
Attack.
That's the thing when he decides to, not jump ship. What's the word I'm looking for?
Eject.
To evacuate the ship or whatever.
Yeah.
That moment seemed to me to be very, like, leader-y and kind of George Kirk-like. But I honestly... Yeah.
But, I mean...
Yeah.
I guess the whole thing is I kind of took it the opposite way, where, you know, it's not really a moment of triumph to be evacuating your ship.
Oh, I don't even mean that it was a moment of triumph. No, but, like... I meant more like that was very reminiscent of 2009 when his father has to make a big decision and decides to, you know, evacuate the ship. And it kind of put him in a similar position where he doesn't want to do it, but he knows he has to. But that's what I was thinking about when I saw that other scene. Not when they first see that huge swarm and are trying to figure out what to do.
Anyway,
like I was saying, Christopher Pike, he's not like some kind of traitor or anything, but he was kind of a disillusioned kind of captain. And you know, he had cameos the Christopher Pike of this alternate universe is much different from the Christopher Pike in the original series, because he had a whole other thing going on. But he also was injured and put in a wheelchair, and so that was kind of a callback to the original series. And then Gary Mitchell was in the other pilot episode that I was talking about, and yeah, he was not. I don't think he was a captain. He was. He had a gold shirt, so he was command. But I don't think he was a captain. But I mean, there's definitely other episodes where, you know, captains kind of go rogue and have to be kind of taken down or whatever, defeated. So I know I brought up that point earlier in this episode. Some other stuff I was thinking about, which kind of was either callbacks to the 2009 film or kind of reminded me of TOS, was like someone had mentioned online that some of Chris Pine's line deliveries were very like Shatner-esque. And I definitely was, like, trying to look out for that the second time I watched it. And I was like, I'm definitely feeling some Shatner in the first couple lines. When he was talking to the first set of aliens, the ones who he was trying to broker some kind of peace treaty with. When he's talking to them, he definitely, like, slips into a bit of a Shatner-esque kind of line reading, which is kind of funny to me.
I did kind of notice that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was there. It was definitely there.
Like, I don't know. It didn't really bother me. I didn't feel like he was doing, like, his best impressions, because that would have been bad.
No, it didn't sound like an impression. It just sounded kind of like Shatner. Like, I don't think he was trying to do an impression, but...
Yeah.
There was some stuff going on with his, like, cadence that I was like, and then, again, backtracking, when Scotty lands on the planet and he jumps out of the craft that he's in and scrambles up the rock so he doesn't fall to his death, the whole clinging onto a cliff thing, I'm telling you, man, it's like every J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie has to have someone clinging to a cliff and just dragging themselves up and off of the cliff back to the top, because I've seen that so many times. And they did that like 3 times in the 2009 movie, and I'm so sure they did it in the Into Darkness movie. So I was like, even this film where he's not even directing, he's just producing, they still had to throw it in there, because naturally they did.
It was so unnecessary as a moment.
It really was.
Why?
It's just, I don't know. It's like, JJ has to have people falling off cliffs.
Because it's like,
Whedon needs feet.
I don't even know, man.
It's like
instant drama, but it's just not.
It's just
worth
stupid.
It's resolved instantly. We all know you're not just gonna die.
Yeah,
by
Scotty's not
gonna
die. Please, I guess it was just like they need to destroy the ship so Scotty can't just hang out there. But that's stupid. So
he can always just hang out there.
Anyway, But yeah, so let's get back to, I think we're talking, let's try to finish up because we've been talking for quite some time, but let's go to, oh, is that a little cupcake? That's adorable.
It is.
You're very distracting today.
My mind is everywhere.
Okay, so, oh, I'm such an idiot. As I was scrolling through the wiki, I see that Spock and McCoy, they did not take a shuttle or a pod to the planet. They were stuck in the turbo lift. I don't know why I didn't realize that they were stuck in the turbo lift. Okay, whatevs.
You'll find that I occasionally tune you out.
Yeah, you've been tuning me out a lot this episode. I could tell. Because you just get this vacant, distant look and you're not even staring at the screen. I'm like, okay then.
I'm actually staring at a poster right now. I'm listening completely, but I am staring at a poster. It's the one that I got of Connecticut with you.
Oh, at the water fire.
Yeah. I keep staring at it. Sorry.
It's cool. So yeah, let's see. So, I think they've convinced Jayla to bring them to their friends, even though she is scared of Krall. They go there. They have a diversion, which involves Kirk riding a motorcycle and using Jayla's illusion machine thing to confuse, I guess, Manus and Krall as to where the real Kirk is.
That was a nice callback.
To what?
Well, I mean, the motorcycle was a nice callback to the first film.
Yeah.
And, you know, the technology was, you know, you knew that was going to be coming back. But, like, I kind of thought it'd be, like, coming back for a really important reason. But, and it's not that, like, rescuing everybody wasn't really important, but it was just done so, in such a fun manner that I was like, oh, this is, like, it was so lighthearted. I did not expect that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, they're trying to rescue and it's serious and blah, blah, blah. But, like, it was still fun.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just trying to, like, skim through the wiki plot points to make sure I got to everything I wanted to talk about. Because I know the stuff I forgot that I was, like, trying to remember to talk about now, but it's, like, kind of gone. Anyway, so, yeah, he's, like, kind of flying on his bike through the quarry or base or whatever. I think I mentioned, though I might have been cut off, not too crazy about the CGI effects as they are entering the quarry. It just looked kind of bad. But that was the only CGI thing I had problems with. So I went to see this with my roommate, and one thing he pointed out to me at the end of, when we left the movie, he was like, if Kirk is driving the motorcycle, like, how is the illusion going in all different directions? You know? And I was like, bruh, it's sci-fi. Like, it never makes sense. What?
Don't think about it. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, what they just did is magic. That's not science.
Yeah. Because he was like, you know, like,
I didn't even spend an instant thinking about it. I was like, magic.
You know, because I see what he means. Because it's like, if real Kirk is turning left, wouldn't all the illusions turn left? And wouldn't you be able to spot where the real one was?
Yeah, because the other ones were crashing.
Yeah, right, exactly. But apparently that's not how it works. And as we've mentioned many times before, sci-fi doesn't make any sense. And suspend your disbelief and blah, 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 because sci-fi.
Yeah. Sometimes those kind of things really are jarring and they just bother me so much. And sometimes I just don't care. And this is one of those instances I know it doesn't make sense, but I don't care.
So it was kind of like rule of cool. Like, I was like, it looks pretty cool, and sure. Why not? Why not have Kirk multiplied a billion times driving in all
sorts
of directions?
Take a crazy chance. Why not do a crazy dance?
What are you even referencing?
Dishonor.
Oh my god.
Why not by Hilary Duff?
Wait,
anyway.
Oh god. When you say Dishonor, I just think of the Mulan or whatever, Eddie Murphy's line in Mulan.
That is what I'm referencing always. Anyway, before I forget to mention it.
Okay.
Love is so important and it really turns the world around. No, I really liked that Kirk didn't get a love interest.
Oh yeah, like finally.
yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. It was kind of nice to just focus on just Kirk as...
Yeah, he needs to figure out who he is first before he can really commit himself to a relationship. This is
very true, though. I feel like dude has a lot of, like...
Dude has trauma.
Yeah, dude has a lot of trauma and damage. Like, get yourself sorted out first. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because the original, you know, Shatner Kirk was kind of, like... supposed to be a womanizer, or he was always, you know.
Boy, don't try it in front. I know just who you are.
But no, he was a womanizer, and like, but he did, like, there were some very poignant TOS episodes where, like, you know, the most famous one I think is City on the Edge of Forever, where he falls in love with someone from the past, and, you know, she ends up dying because plot the reasons, past. And Not even the plot reasons, and then it's just, like, so tragic. But yeah, it's, like, really weird. I cannot remember for the life of me if Carol Marcus in the previous movie was supposed to be a love interest. I think she was. Her name, at least, is kind of important because the original Carol Marcus was a love interest. I think was actually had a son with the original Kirk. Like, that was, like, a whole thing. And then, like, they kind of alluded to Kirk being a womanizer a bit in the first movie, but, like, it just was, like, yeah, it's kind of nice to see him be more mature.
And yeah, exactly.
And just being, just, like, have Kirk be Kirk, and, like, he's a little bit more, you mellow. Know, of an adult, and level-headed nowadays, because
I mean,
you know,
sorry,
no, I mean, you can go
on. No, I was just saying that, like, you know, we don't get a lot of, like, romantic subplot, like, you know, we probably get a full minute and a half devoted to, like, Spock and Uhura.
Yeah, they didn't get as much, I guess, romance, but that's kind of okay, honestly. And I'm a big shipper, but, like, sometimes you just gotta focus on other things in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing about that for me is that, you know, they set up this conflict between the two of them, which is a conflict which makes sense, which we talked about earlier. And then it's like we don't actually see the conflict go down, and we don't really see it get resolved that well either. Like,
yeah, it was more just like a side note.
It was like a super side note, like a PS, PSS.
Like a footnote of a footnote.
Like, that was somebody's, like, great idea for the film, and then all of a sudden it just kept getting knocked lower and lower in terms of priorities.
I mean, that's certainly been an idea I've seen discussed in fandom, where it's like, well, wouldn't Spock be kind of torn about, like, he should probably repopulate his race, but, like, he clearly has a, like, romantic relationship with Uhura, so, like, how's that gonna work? I've definitely seen people throw that idea around in fandom and write about it, but it just was very side note in this.
Yeah, right. Movie. If you're going to introduce it, I would have liked to see more of that. I mean, obviously, it's something that kind of influences Spock throughout the film, and you can kind of see it weighing on him, but I would have really loved to have it a little bit more explicit.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's not the Spock and Uhura show, right? It's going to be more of the Kirk show.
What?
Because it's just, that's how these movies are set up. The
reason I thought of it is because, you know, like, Uhura she has a little to do, but she doesn't get, like, a lot to do. But, you know, her crowning moment of awesome is when she saves Spock. Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like I think her most badass thing was when she is, like, fighting and blasting the drones in the Enterprise.
That was pretty nice.
I like that action scene. It was short, sweet, to the point, and I don't know. I think it just showed she's a good fighter, which I liked. I get what you mean. Like, she, it's funny because she saves Spock, and right after he's like, "I'm here to save you."
Okay, that's like one Spock. Of the oldest things in the book, but, like, it's always
it
fun.
Was so cute though.
It was. It was
like, aw, but also Spock, you're ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, he just got, like, stabbed almost in the heart. Like, what the heck, man.
Yeah, but, dude, calm yourself.
It's like, whatever. Oh, man, I feel like I had some note about like Jayla or something, but I just cannot remember.
Every time I say Jayla, I think of J-Lo. Not J-Law, J-Lo, as in Jenny from the Block.
Oh, so, God.
She's still Jenny from the Block.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fun fact.
I just quoted like 10 different songs in the past 3 minutes, so hope you enjoy.
When Spock and Bones land in that like river, right? And
the river of death.
Bones is trying to like heat up that sharp metal edge so he can like cauterize the wound or whatever. That scene when he's trying to pull that metallic object from the turbo lift, and he falls into the river and then gets back up. The fall was like completely accidental. It wasn't supposed to happen, but they just like the editors liked it, so they just kept it. They just kept it.
That's great.
I liked it too. I think the editing was pretty good. Like the thing with good editing is like if it's good editing, you don't notice it. It's just seamless, which I thought was, it was pretty seamless. Nothing really jumped out at me as like being awkward, kind of like into darkness. The times where we got like weird shots, like Scotty coming out of the pod, or you know the I guess stationary shot of the photon cannon and you know stars rushing around, like weird shots, like they looked really cool and I liked it. But yeah, I think overall the editing was pretty solid in this film. Trying to think, what else did we get to? You know, I wonder what the budget for the first one was. Because, like, they were running around like a Budweiser, filming parts of that movie in a Budweiser. Like, no lie. So it was definitely lower, but I just don't know. I don't know numbers-wise how much it was.
You want to look it up? First off, is that Star Trek Beyond had a production cost of $185 million. Which is a bit lower than the $190 million, which was the budget for Into Darkness. So it went down slight, but I think they filmed this one in LA or something to save money, something like that. Whatever, it was.
I heard they filmed Beyond in Vancouver to save money.
Wherever they filmed it, it was definitely to be cost effective.
Yeah. They might have also shot in Dubai, but I'm not sure. Oh, let's see. Let me just look through the wiki.
$150 million. The budget for the first one was $150 million.
Oh, so they gave them an extra like $40 million.
Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad. Okay. So let's see. It's hard to keep all these threads in order, you know, because there's so much stuff going on.
There is.
But let's see. So,
heading back.
Blah blah blah. Infiltrating the base. Let's see.
I am jumping a little ahead. I'm not sure if you have had anything else, but I really liked the scene where they had to start the Franklin. It was like trying to start like a car, an old car.
when they were making it nosedive off the cliff or whatever.
You have to do it just right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean. Because Scotty points out, you know, these are starships. They're not meant to take off from, like, Earth. They're meant to be built in space and take off from space. Which I heard a lot of nerds were very happy about that because that's something they were kind of pissed about with, like, previous movies.
Yeah, I have heard that.
The biggest nerds in the Star Trek crowd were very happy to hear that line. Let's see. Okay, so, yeah. Crawl, while Manus is fighting Jayla, and, you know, Kirk is trying to get the rest of the crew on board, Crawl decides he's going to start his attack on Yorktown. So he kind of jets off with some drones. They get started on their attack. And then the Enterprise has to catch up. The USS Franklin has to catch up.
Yeah, don't disrespect.
So... let's see. There's so much stuff that I want to talk. I just cannot remember it. I'm so annoyed because I remembered it like hours ago. Should have written it down.
Anyway. I loved the moment. I can't remember exactly what he says, but like for me, like the scene where the Franklin takes off, like, that's Sulu's moment of triumph.
Yeah.
Like, it was so good.
Isn't that the part where, like, Pine. Isn't that the part where Kirk says, like, can you fly this thing? And then Sulu just turns back and is like, are you kidding me, sir? But that, again, that's, I'm pretty sure that's yet another callback to the first film, because Pike says that same thing. He's like, can you fly this thing? And he's like,
Pshaw.
He doesn't say, Pshaw. He's like, and then Spock is like, have you engaged the initial inertial dampeners or something like that? And then Sulu's like, does it? And it's like, we're ready now. I mean, they've all come a long way in the past 3 years. Sulu couldn't even, like, freaking fly the dang thing 3 years ago. Sorry, now Sulu, I love him. You. But
he's careening down cliffs.
Yeah, he's in the Franklin. So, yeah, again, they have to make the drop from another cliff because
into light speed.
It's always a cliff. And then they have to warp up and out of there. The whole waiting to the very end to pull the trigger or whatever. Again, very similar to the parachute thing that happened in the first movie. And also, on that note of the parachute thing, remember how when Kirk goes to grab Jayla's hand so they can teleport back to the ship?
Yeah.
And when they teleport back, they land hard on the on the pad. The same thing happened in the 2009 movie.
I do remember that.
Yeah. Again, I watched that movie too much.
I think you have. I think that you have a problem. I feel like some of these are just kind of tropes.
Yeah, but some of them are definitely, like, the same exact thing.
Some of them are definitely the callbacks. But, like, the thing about, like, having to wait the last minute to, like, press the button or pull the lever. Oh, yeah, that's, like, a
classic sci-fi thing.
That's one of my favorites. I just,
oh, you like that, Drew?
I always enjoy it because, like, you never are too worried because you know it'll be fine.
Unless, like, you're a red shirt, like the guy in the 2009 film. Because that was, remember, it was Kirk. Pike had sent Kirk, Sulu, and I think his name is Orson. It doesn't really matter what his name is. But, and a random red shirt to go, destroy the Romulan weird power energy drill thing. And They're doing the parachute thing where they're, like, waiting till the last minute to pull it. And that one red shirt's like, nope, not yet. And everyone's like, you're an idiot. You need to pull the parachute. He's like, not yet. And he pulls it, and he just gets incinerated by the fire. Oh, my God. I'm telling you, man, like, as much as I enjoyed Beyond, like, 2009 was such a more hilarious film. But then I already mentioned that before.
Yeah, deaths are really funny.
You know what I mean. It was just more lighthearted. It was just more lighthearted. It was just, come on, dude. I mean, I remember being vaguely horrified, but every time after the first time I watched it, I just laughed because it's just,
it doesn't take itself too seriously as a film, which is really, I think that's one of the reasons.
Beyond or 2009?
2009.
Yeah.
I feel like this one, it does. It takes itself much more seriously.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the science and all. And, like, I'm not saying that's bad and it does make it feel very kind of genuine, but it doesn't feel quite the same kind of blockbustery feel.
Yeah, it's just different.
As, like, some of the earlier ones.
Yeah. Hence, again,
by earlier ones, I mean the first one and assuming the second one.
Star Trek-y. Yeah, we don't talk about the second one. But yeah, that's what I mean. It's just more, it's a little more serious. Although I will say, like, with the original Star Trek, like, it was funny, but in, like, a cheesy, campy kind of 60s way. Which I don't think you can really emulate nowadays. So,
no.
So, you know, like, it's just not gonna fly, like, weird, cheesy humor.
Yeah, the humor is definitely different, but, like, I don't know. It works.
I don't know. If you remember any of those, we watched, like, Trouble with Tribbles. Like, you remember how at the end it's, like, that weird little, like, lighthearted music? It's like, do-do-do-do. It's like, whenever someone tells a joke, they just do that. And it's just, like, zing, it's like sitcom ending. It was just like, that's like just like the old Star Trek's like way of injecting comedy into things. But like, yeah, you can't really pull that kind of stuff off nowadays. It's just like really out of place.
It's because audiences are so cynical.
Yeah, we can't deal with weird cheesy humor anymore. We're just so cynical.
We just want explosions.
Yeah, basically.
Basically.
So, Krall brings the MacGuffin to Yorktown. at this point, when they're kind of, I think, I don't know if this was at this part or before, but my roommate definitely remarked on how Yorktown looked kind of like a Death Star in terms of, like, you had to fly it into that one little, that little corridor or whatever it was. I think this might have been during the chase scene when they're chasing after Krall.
I do know exactly what you mean. It's during the chase scene.
Yeah.
And I had a similar thought where it is kind of like when they're flying through the Death Star to explode it.
Yeah.
I specifically thought of the second Death Star in movie 6. That's kind of the vibe that I was getting because you're kind of going through an enclosed area, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
But again, I mean, it's like sci-fi, dude. Like, yeah. I feel like it's just kind of...
It's just expected. It's just what it is. It's not like I was, like, disrespected or anything.
Yeah. So they're trying to catch up with Krall. I think... So... I like the whole thing where they pull up the schematics and then are trying to figure out how to stop him. Again, the Enterprise always has to do some weird stuff in the movies. Like, 2009 movie, they kind of float out of a cloud in Saturn or whatever. This time, they kind of, like, fly out of the water and just, like, make two of the drones crash against it. I think, if I remember correctly, Krall's ship also crashes against it, too. But he manages to escape after stealing, I guess, one of the human Starfleet officers' powers or life force, because later we see he has a gold command shirt on. We only see the back of his head, so we have no idea what his face looks like, but we kind of assume he looks normal enough because no one is panicking, running and screaming away from him. You know, he's off to put the bioweapon into, I guess, the air filtration system or whatever.
That's such a boring villain move.
I know. Ugh, could you be a little more like, I don't know,
creative.
We get a shot of Sulu's husband and the daughter yet again running off like panicked people because heartstrings need to be pulled, apparently.
That's what they always do in films like this. Like, right? They're always like, let's ground you by flashing back to the random people you saw for 3 seconds.
Nothing wrong.
The innocents, think of the children.
Yeah, so we see that so it's Kirk and Uhura. They go onto the ship that Krall was on, and no, they don't. That's a lie. Aren't they still on the Franklin? Uhura passes by that video, and because she's such a skilled like
human,
not just a human. But I didn't even think about this until someone pointed it out when I read it. But it's like she figured out. By listening to one, like, you know that video clip that plays over and over again? And we see later on that, you know, Idris Elba's just, like, in the background.
Chilling like a villain.
Or should I say, what's his actual name? Balthazar Edison or whatever. Yeah. I'm trying to make sure I get the order of his name right. Because
I think you're
right. Yeah, it's Balthazar Edison. So... She hears Balthazar Edison say, like, one word, and she can immediately identify that was Krall. It's funny, because it just kind of... I almost forgot about it completely, but she's a communications officer, and she has a good ear for these things. Like, that's, like, crazy skill, dude. But nice job. Obviously, watching it the second time around, I knew what was going to happen, so I kept watching that video feed, trying to see if I could spot Idris. You cannot spot Idris in that video feed. It just shows like the people who are covering him in front, and it always cuts away or gets obscured, so you actually never see Idris Elba until they finally slow the video down, like, times five or whatever it was. And it's like, oh, it's Idris. And that's interesting. So, yeah, at that point, we figure out that we know for sure that Kral used to be human. Okay, now I remember what I was going to say. You asked me before if I had any inkling that Kral was a human, right?
Yeah.
And my answer to you was when he, like, first really talks to Uhura, and is like, you know, like, what's your name? And she says, my name is Lieutenant Nyota Uhura, and, you know, whatever, you have declared war, it's active war on the Federation, blah, blah, blah. And then he kind of just gets all threatening and is like, blah, 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 Lieutenant Uhura. I was like, huh, that's weird. He either... I don't know if I thought he is human, but I definitely thought he's definitely probably been in contact with human culture because, not just because he knows how to speak English, but because how does he know to address her by title then last name, if that makes sense?
Actually, it's just like a weird inane detail, but I actually thought the same thing.
Yeah, no. It's such a weird mundane detail, but I definitely was like, you know, because you see Jayla does her weird thing where she's like, Montgomery Scott, oh no, my name's Scotty, Montgomery Scott. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just, it felt like, how does he know that he has to say Lieutenant Uhura? And wouldn't he, if he was, like, really an alien or really not, didn't know anything about human culture, he would say her whole name, you know what I mean? So, I don't know, that just kind of tipped me off that, like, something was up, but I don't know if I didn't immediately jump to the conclusion, oh, he's human. I just thought, oh, like, he's probably been around humans a bunch of times. And has, like, some beef with them. Which was, to be fair, both are true. he has been around humans, and he does have beef with humans. But it's more the Federation than anything else. Yeah, I don't know. I wish we could have gotten more Idris, man. It was nice seeing him on that, doing those weird video logs. But it just would have been better if we got more Kral or more Idris Elba. You know? But that's just my opinion. So, okay, he's in the... I think it's
most people's opinion.
What?
I think it's most people's opinion.
Yeah, I guess if they care about the film. I know my sister was freaking out when she saw the video for a completely different reason, and her theory was completely wrong. I remember I had heard her, like, gasp and freak out when she first saw the video change, and then once we got back to it and it was explaining what it was, she was like, oh... Never mind, my theory is completely incorrect. And I asked her what it was. She thought that the video that was shown was actually some random footage from, like, the 2009 film. And I was like, you could not be further away from the truth right now. But yeah, I mean, definitely having it all in green was, like, super eerie. But I also really liked that whole... that kind of subtle zoom in on Uhura when she was trying to figure out what the heck was going on with the video clip. It was nice. And you know, even though she doesn't have much to do, she is an important part of the plot.
No, she, like, definitely, you know,
like, they
is.
Would have never figured out that was Balthazar Edison if it wasn't for her.
I mean, yeah, but, like, in terms of, like, story, I feel like any of them could have figured it out.
But she has, like, the skills, dude. She can listen to someone say one word and realize that their mutated alien form is the same person. Like, that's crazy.
I mean, yeah, but, like, that's never a skill that was ever set up.
Yeah, I that's the thing. Like, I almost completely forgot that she was, like, a communications linguist specialist. Like, they mentioned that in the first film quite a bit. And then, I mean, it's, like... She is doing communications, but it's like, yeah, they don't really.
Like, if they had, like, a line, like, in the beginning of the film, like, just reminding us, like, who, or, like, you know, what she could do, that would be, like, super helpful.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things where, again, like, you kind of get. I don't know, this is just me conjecturing, but, like, as a writer, you kind of get wrapped up in how you see a story and you kind of forget that you need to explain things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that shouldn't happen.
No, I'm not saying that should have happened, but it seems it seems like a possible explanation for what did happen with that, like, not being explained.
For me, I can kind of understand it. Like, it's very overwhelming to try and introduce everything, especially because this is, you know, the third of this trilogy and, what, the 13th of the film as a whole.
Yeah.
And so, like, it can be, you know, like, there's a lot of past and there's a lot of kind of knowledge that some people, there's a vast disparity between the knowledge that people come into the films with. So that's really hard.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I mean, although I will say, as weird and doesn't make sense as the whole power energy draining thing was, I still thought it was cool in theory. Like, it was
super cool.
What?
It was super cool.
Yeah, I liked how he was, like, kind of slowly mutating back into a human throughout the film. It was just, like, really, really weird. And then, yeah, I don't know. My question that I had leaving the film the first time was, like, how the heck does he do that? Does he have some kind of special machine? Because, you know, I kept thinking, while he's fighting other people, couldn't he just use the life, sucking force or whatever thing he has? If he doesn't need a machine, can he just do it on his own? Like, when he's battling Kirk, right? He could just suck the life force out of him instead of, like, fighting him. So I was like, maybe he does need a machine, but then we never get any conclusive proof whether he needs a machine or not, you know?
Yeah, it's just another one of those things that you just don't know.
Really vague.
How any of it works.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was, like, really vague, and I was like, huh, I don't know how I feel about this. But, you know, then we have the final standoff in the I guess, air control, whatever thing. And, yeah, I don't know. It was nice to finally see his face. He looks slightly more human. Still doesn't look like Idris, but, you know.
Who does?
Movie can't be perfect, you know? Yeah. And then they do their little one-on-one fighting while Jayla and Scotty very unhelpfully tell them what's going on.
The narration was not necessary.
Really helping us right now. I don't know. I like the cool thing with the glass flying in the wind and, like,
yeah.
Krall just, like, jumps into that jet stream like a badass. And I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, all of the really cool stuff that they set up about Yorktown, like, I feel like all of that, everything worked backwards. Like, somebody said, you know what would be a really cool final scene? And then basically put in the groundwork to make it work. You know what I mean? That's how it went down in my head. Because, like, everything felt like it was kind of leading up to that moment. And all of, like, you know, like, otherwise it's just, oh, yeah, whatever. It's cool, but unnecessary. But, like, they wanted that fight scene to be, like, epic.
And yeah, I think the whole flying thing was really what made it for me. I mean, of course, anytime you have gravity-defying fights, that's always fun. But
I kept thinking of Inception.
Inception. I've seen it be done in, like, Gravity Fall. I mean, it's just, like, a fun sci-fi thing to do. Like, why not have fights in Zero-G? Like, why not? I mean,
yeah, why not? Can you think of one good reason not to? I cannot.
And then so Kirk decides to, you know, jet after him. I mean, I know this is, like, again, it's like a stupid suspend your disbelief thing, but, like, glass is obviously not going to make that noise when it's flying around in the wind, but, like, who cares, dude? It just looks and sounds cool.
Yeah.
The tinkling noise that it made.
Yeah.
To be like, hey, guys, everybody listen to the glass sound. even though this literally would not happen or make sense. But, yeah, no, I even though it was unrealistic, I still enjoyed it because sci-fi.
Reason.
Yeah. And then that great moment where you see the glass shard, you know, float in front of Krall's face and he sees the monster he has become and you're not sure what he's gonna do. Is he gonna try to kill Kirk or is he gonna try to, like, does he realize that he
did
has
something
become
stupid.
A monster? But
yeah.
Nope. He doesn't care. He goes to kill Kirk.
I do like a fully committed villain. Like, don't give me that stupid last-minute redemption crap. Like, unless you set that up, don't do it.
Yeah, but he basically, he had a choice. And then he was like,
He's made the wrong choice for 100 years, okay?
Yeah, basically. He's like, no, too late now. And Kirk is able to send him and the bioweapon out into space. I don't really know how quite how it works that the bioweapon has consumed him but is no longer a threat to anything else. Like, you would think that having a bioweapon kind of floating around in space would be kind of a problem.
You would think.
But I guess we're just going to suspend our disbelief for that too, because, what?
Like, yeah. Speaking of, a little bit before we talk about the rule of cool, the biggest rule of cool moment for me was right before they landed on Yorktown with the music sequence where they blast the music to disrupt
How did I skip past that?
I don't know
that
why
was
you skipped that. That's like
epic.
It was epic and beautiful and didn't make a lot of sense in my mind. I mean, it made enough sense that I bought it and I was like, okay, this is cool, whatever. But like, I don't really know how much sense it really makes, but like, who cares?
It was just cool, dude. And then, you know, just that throwback to the first movie where Kirk is blasting that song in his, like, Kid Kirk is blasting that as he drives the car he stole away, and he's blasting it yet again, and he's like, good choice. And it's like, oh, all the feels.
I have to say, that one moment was enough for me to go, Kirk and Jayla, Not
I
really.
I thought you were
but...
against having some romance or whatever.
No. I am, and I'm glad they didn't. But like that one moment, I was like, you may be compatible.
You may be compatible. Smoking like a true. I don't know. You sound like a bit like an android. Just there. You may be compatible.
Exactly.
But yeah, I thought they were gonna blast Public Enemy again. But when.
Me
but
too.
But then I was like, wait a minute. Wait. And then I was like, oh, it's going to be Sabotage, isn't it? And then it was Sabotage, which was very, obviously the name is very,
poignant.
On point.
Pointed.
And then they had just the timing of it when all of those drone bee things burned against the surface of the, like, the protective barrier around Yorktown. It was just like that scream. And then of course the best part when Bones is like, is that classical music? And then Spock is like, I believe it is. And it's just like,
that was pretty good.
It's just so good. Because again, it's really funny. I feel like they addressed a lot of stuff that people had felt or talked about in the first film, but they kind of addressed it here. Because I remember people being like, isn't it kind of weird that like little Kirk is blasting what's probably considered classical music? And then they actually brought it up in the film. Like, I don't know if Simon Pegg's been, like, lurking on some internet forums or whatever.
I believe it.
But
okay.
It seems likely. It seems very likely. Because
I believe it.
It was just weird hearing stuff in the movie that I've definitely heard or read online. Like,
I mean, it probably, you know, it kind of validates a lot of people's, like, thoughts and opinions.
Yeah. But it's like a fun nod. And it's like a validation and... trick for the Trekkies.
Exactly. That's why, I mean, people are very happy with this film.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the film too. I mean, I'm probably gonna buy it, the Blu-ray or DVD or something. But yeah, I can't wait for the what are they called, the bloopers to come out, because those are gonna be fun.
That'll be fun.
Have you seen John Cho's Dub Smash videos?
I don't think so.
Okay, because basically, the cast, mainly it's been John Cho doing them with random cast members. It's just like on Twitter, he just does these quick karaoke lip sync things, and they're like so good, dude. They're not karaoke, they're lip sync. But he does these.
No, I know it though.
Have you seen any of them?
No, not those.
They're pretty funny. I mean, anytime I see one with Anton, I get really sad. But like. Yeah. Most of them are with Chris Pine, but they're like so good. I'm gonna definitely put a link to the show notes, but there's so many and they're so funny. The comedic timing in so many of them is just so excellent. Like, there's this one where Chris Pine just ends it with a hair flip, and it's just perfection. But anyway, sorry. Back to this. Let's finish this thing up. So. Krall gets ejected into space and then eaten by the
space monsters,
space nanite thingies. Has a very epic death where he just it just consumes him, and you see that dead-eyed, thousand-yard stare, and I'm like,
dude,
I don't think he's coming back. But this kind of death, where you're staring at the audience like this, it just feels like he's gonna come back. I know he's not gonna come back, but it just had that foreboding feeling, and I'm just like, I don't know about this. So yeah, they triumph, they win, and then we have the birthday party. Bones is such a softie. I love him for doing that. And it's nice to see, like, Kirk has finally accepted his birthday as a thing that can actually be celebrated instead of, you know, like, it's just, it's definitely, a character starts in one point, ends at a different point, you know?
You know what it reminds me of? This is super off topic, so I'll keep it quick. But it reminds me of Raven in Teen Titans. I don't have a lot of familiarity with anything beyond the TV show.
The one episode?
Huh?
Oh, beyond the TV show. I thought you said beyond, like, the specific episode you're talking about.
No. Just beyond the TV show itself that used to run on Cartoon Network. But I was a huge fan of it. And, you know, like, she has, like, a long reason why she doesn't like her birthday. But then by the end of kind of that arc in the episode, like, she's kind of come around to it. And I was like, and they throw her a party. Aww. And I'm like, this is the same thing. I totally get it.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen the whole person people doesn't like their birthday party for various, I think Buffy had that reasons. For a you know, even while. Gravity Falls had an episode like that, and like I definitely teared up a little bit when I was watching that one, because it was basically how the character in question, who didn't like his birthday, it was basically because he had like an absent dad who would always send postcards saying happy birthday but would never show up, and it was just like, oh, the sadness. Tragedy. But yeah. Like, so I don't know, it was very poignant, and it was really nice seeing everyone in casual clothes. Like,
it was kind of jarring, but like in a good way.
Yeah, again, it's just something about this film, man. Everyone just felt more like a person and more human.
Absolutely.
It was just really, really nice.
They've kind of like settled kind of into their roles as well. I mean, beyond like the writing and directing, but they really feel like they've really become more comfortable. They're not just playing a version of themselves, they're just playing in a character.
Yeah, it was funny because my sister was like cringing the entire time when she saw Spock's outfit, and I'm like, come on, dude, I know it's ugly, it's okay, he's a Vulcan, it's okay, let it go.
That's their deal.
What?
That's their deal.
They don't know how to dress, although I will say the Vulcans from earlier were a lot better dressed, so maybe he doesn't have an excuse after all. Whatever. I guess when you're half human, half Vulcan, you're just confused. So it's just like, I know Spock's shirt is ugly. Let it go, Jessica.
I mean, that's what happens when you have to wear something like every single day. Like, you lose sense of like what's cool.
I don't know. I feel like Bones and Kirk look pretty good in their casual civilian gear. But
because they probably look good in anything.
That's true. And yeah, we get that awesome, you know, Kirk gives a toast. We get a cut to Anton when he says, you know, I don't know if he says fall. What is it? I said it earlier and I can't remember what I said. It was like
friends.
A toast to like fallen friend or something along those lines. And it cuts to Anton. It's like, no. And then again, earlier we had before the party, we had that nice shot of the old crew from the Prime timeline, which is really nice. And I guess that's just one of the things that makes Spock decide to stay, you know? Also, in addition to the fact that, you know, earlier on, when Spock and Bones swoop in to, you know,
grab
Jim Kirk after he falls out of that weird air thing, you know, he's like, you know, Spock, what would I do without you? And it's just like, what would he do without you? He would be lost.
Dead by next
like
week.
You're like a match set, man. You can't just leave the Enterprise. Also, Zachary Quinto and Chris Pine have signed additional, you know, contracts to do, like, movies 4 and 5. So, you can't leave, dude. You just can't.
Yeah. But we get kind of the conclusions of their little, you know, character issues and arcs where, you know, everyone's going to stay and everyone's going to be happy.
Yeah, you know, it's really beautiful. Funny, though, because I was definitely thinking earlier in the film, right, when it's after they have to get back on the ship to go into the nebula, and Kirk and Spock are just awkwardly talking in the turbo lift, and it's so awkward.
Yeah.
Remember that scene where it's like, I just need to tell you, as do I, and it's just like, quiet crickets, and it's just like super awkward. I don't know. It's funny because, you know, like the first film was all about how they were very like opposed and antagonistic towards each other, and it just, yeah. I don't know. I feel like even though the characters have kind of settled, it doesn't. That one scene made me feel like Kirk and Spock still do not know where they stand with each other. Like, they seem really awkward, and I don't know if that was like a one-off thing. Or
I feel like it's because the topic that they were both going to talk about was really awkward for both of them, and they probably felt like they'd be letting the other one down by what they were going to say.
Yeah, that's like I wasn't sure what to interpret that as, like, they're still awkward after 3 years of working together, or it's just like, you know, what you were saying, like they care too much about the other's opinion and are just like kind of like, I feel like they're not going to react well. It's probably the latter.
Yeah, because, like, otherwise they still have a good rapport. I mean, we don't get a lot between the two of them, relatively, but, like, the depth of their relationship is heavily implied.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, like, when all we kind of get is, like, a final scene at the end of the two of them, like, chit-chatting it out, where they're like, yeah, it wasn't really that important anyway. I was like, I probably shouldn't feel validated, but I do. It's fine.
Feel validated?
Yeah, but, like, you know, you set up all these things, and, like, you set up this conflict between these two characters, and everything's resolved before the two characters talk it out. That doesn't usually happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of weird like that.
But, you know, it was fine, because they didn't need to. Their relationship transcends words anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, we already had the whole Kirk, Spock hate each other, and fight like cats and dogs sing in the first movie, so we didn't really need any kind of rehash of that this time around. Definitely in this film, when you had, I mean, because you had that whole Spock and Bones thing going on, their relationship is definitely stronger. I mean, here's the thing, right? As much as I ship Spock and Uhura, one, I can never really ship Spock and Kirk. Like, I just don't see it, man. Like, I know a lot of people do. I just don't see it. But I could definitely see, like, Spock and Bones. Like, oh my god. Yeah. I could totally see that. Even though I don't ship it, like, that seems much more realistic to me than, like, Kirk and Spock. Like, what is that even? No. Like, no. But, there's plenty of people who ship, like, you know, Kirk and Bones. But that kind of just makes sense, honestly. If you, logically following the first movie, I don't know how much I feel about, like, for Beyond. Because Beyond feels like they're more, like, chill friends. But, like...
Yeah.
Anyway, Shipper's gonna ship, so...
Shipper's gonna ship. And
then, you know, you have the OT3 or the OT4s or whatever.
Those are always just the best of both worlds. It's like... Why or when you can have and?
Yeah, why be... Why, there's so many OT3s for Spock, Uhura, and Kirk. Like, and then, you know, or you have the good old trifecta of Kirk, Bones, and Spock. Or if you have OT4, you have all four. Like, why not have all of them? But yeah, I don't know. I'm not much of an OT3 or an OT4. It just doesn't really do it for me, but, you know, whatever floats your boat, fandom. Whatever floats your boat.
So true,
Yeah, so, yeah, they celebrate, and then, hey, there's a new ship being built, which they talked about way early in the beginning of the film. Remember when they were like, oh, you're the second most advanced ship. They're actually building the first most advanced ship, which is the Enterprise A. Guess they can't change the name. And I don't know, I really liked that hyperlapse fast motion building sequence. That was, like, super cool.
It was.
And then having everyone speak at the end. It was just really nice.
It was. It made me feel things. I hate feeling things. No, I'm kidding. No, yeah, it was really good. I really liked that.
But yeah, it was just, I don't know. I left this film feeling so complete and happy. I mean, being the Trekkie that I am, I'm just glad to have gotten a good movie. I mean, anything was going to be better than Into Darkness. I mean, I didn't really think it was going to get worse, honestly. And
never jinx it.
Thankfully, okay? It did not.
You could get the Last Airbender. It can always get worse.
I just walked out of Into Darkness feeling like really, I don't know, disappointed. But then walking out of this film, I was just really happy with how it ended. I mean, I'm sure there's so much more I have to say and think about. But honestly, we've been talking for long enough. Mm-hmm. Any final notes you want to give, Melissa?
I guess my final thought is just that, like, I'm really glad that I saw this movie, but if I wasn't going to be podcasting about it, I don't think I would have seen it, at least not in theaters. I think eventually I definitely would have seen it, mm-hmm. But I had no real desire to go see it, even though the reviews were quite good. It was mostly because, even though I hadn't seen the second one, I had heard people being very disappointed in it, yeah. And it doesn't really inspire faith, one, and two, I usually hate watching movies out of order. Like, if there's a sequence of movies, even if one is renowned as bad, or even if you don't even need to see one to see the next one, I just hate watching movies out of order. I always want to watch it in the way that it's meant to be viewed. So, yeah. You know, if I wasn't going to be doing this, I probably wouldn't have even seen it. I'm actually quite glad that I did. And I enjoyed it a lot. It's not a movie that I would, like, run and tell all my friends, like, oh my gosh, you have to go see this movie, it's so amazing. But like, if this is like what you like, it's definitely going to you know, suit you and suit what your desires and interests.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it just doesn't invoke that same like fervor I felt for the 2009 one. But like, I definitely want to encourage people to see this, just because I want them to not have that negative association with Into Darkness, like, honestly. And I definitely heard that from a lot of people, like, I don't really know if I should watch this, I feel like I should watch the second one first. And I'm just like, I'm almost always like that too, like, I want to watch it in order, but I'm like, guys, you do not need to see Into Darkness before this, like, just skip it, please. Yeah. For the love of everything, just skip to Beyond. But yeah, I don't know, I actually stayed pretty spoiler-free for the most part for this movie. I didn't really get too hyped up about it. Like, I got really hyped up about the other one, but this one I was kind of just like, you know what? I've been burned before. I will not get burned again.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, you know, I'll see it when it comes out, and if it's good, it's good. If it's not good, it's not good. I mean, I hope it does well, because I would love to see more films in the Star Trek universe. And I'd love to see, I don't know, like, stuff of this quality. Or, you know, 2009 quality. It's nice to have a nice, cerebral, optimistic, multicultural, pluralistic, throw in all the social justice-y words I can think of, kind of, you know, movie that's not, you know, purely action, popcorn, whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, from what I've seen for the box office numbers, they're good. They're nothing, like, great or anything really to write home about, but,
yeah,
you know, they're good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean
that's it's the thing. Not, like, fantastic, but...
I left the film thinking, this was a good, solid movie with good, solid writing and, you know, solid cinematography, editing, acting, and all the rest. Like, it's not... I'm not, like, freaking out about it, but I'm really happy with how it went, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Star Trek is just, it's just, I really love the ideas that it encompasses, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, it's nice to finally kind of see that more in the film, you know? Because, you know, the first one is just introducing all the major players, really.
Yeah.
So you finally get more kind of like, the actual values of this show.
Yeah, like the optimism, nice. And the science and the
Yeah.
A little bit of hokey science, but mostly good enough for me to believe.
It's like, it's not at all a hard sci-fi.
What are you talking about? This is completely factual.
But yeah, I don't know. I hope they keep getting better. I mean, like I said, I feel like the curse has been reversed, so I'm not holding my breath for the next one, but we'll see what happens. I don't know. Yeah, maybe Hemsworth will make it, like, amazing or something. Huh?
Yeah. No, I just think you never know, especially because, like, I feel like I'm not 100% sure, but, like, everything's in flux now, isn't it? Like, the writing, the directing.
I mean, everything's always in flux. I mean, Beyond was in flux for
a long time.
You know? So, yeah. I don't know. I just...
But when it's in flux, it can kind of be hit or miss.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's why I wasn't really holding my breath for Beyond either, because I was just kind of like, you know, whatever happens, happens. And I'll deal with it when I see the movie. But yeah, I'm just glad it's not going completely downhill. Like, it's actually, it's just nice. Because even Carl Urban wasn't, like, super thrilled with, like, the last movie. He didn't even want to do Beyond because, like, he basically didn't really have anything to do he doesn't really develop character-wise that much in the previous film. He's like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do the third film. But then Justin Lin was able to convince him otherwise. He's like, you know, you actually have stuff to do and have character stuff. And Bones definitely gets a lot of character stuff happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a franchise ender, certainly. Or at least, this piece of the franchise ender. Like, I remember watching The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which was a franchise, or, you know, that version of Spider-Man ender. But like it wasn't like that bad of a movie, you know, but it wasn't like anything great. And I didn't, when I watched it, I was like, this isn't a franchise ender, but it was. So that's sad. I don't know where I was going with
a franchise what
ender.
Like, oh, franchise ender. Yeah, no, I don't think Beyond is a franchise ender. I didn't think they were gonna do more than three films, but you know what, with Quinto and Pine signing more contracts, I mean, they're definitely going to be involved. I mean, I would hope that the other main crew members are also stay on, but you never know, you know?
Yeah, you don't really know.
Because, I mean, apparently Zoe Saldana is, like, a super big name now, because she's been in a bunch of things.
Zoe Saldana is, like, she's been in a bajillion things. She's, she's legit movie star.
Yeah, so she's, like, probably going to ask for more money, and then they'll have to negotiate stuff. And I mean, yeah, she's also busy with, like, I think, I don't know if they're doing more Avatars, but you know, there's
supposedly
I honestly feel like,
don't talk to me about Avatar.
It doesn't need a sequel. Like, I think we're all kind of content with what happened. But
the thing about I saw somebody post, like, this thing on social media about how, like, Avatar, like, made the most money of any movie ever, and yet no one remembers anything about it. It's, like, this big cultural gap. Like, we know, like, vaguely a little bit of what happens, but, like, no, there's nothing that came out of it. No, like, catchphrases or, like, even, like, merch or, like, any, like, it's just this big gap that everyone saw the movie.
Yeah, I saw the movie, but I really don't remember too much of it.
Exactly.
It's weird.
And there's been too long of a gap between the you know, if there is another movie coming out, which is supposedly there will be, there's just been too much time elapsed. Like, I literally don't care anymore.
It wasn't memeable enough or something, or just wasn't memorable enough? Like, what was it, man?
I don't know. It was visually stunning, but everything else was kind of like, and like,
it was
visually stunning
bland,
doesn't translate to...
Visuals notwithstanding, it was pretty bland, I feel like.
I walked out of there, like, really, really impressed with, like, how it looked. Like, I felt like I'd really been on a journey. But then afterwards, I felt, whatever.
It's funny how everyone just forgot, even though everyone watched
it. So weird.
Maybe it was some kind of alien Illuminati mind trick or something.
Some shared dream. It didn't even exist. Anyway.
But speaking of merch, can I just say, when... in the very beginning montage, again, where everything's, like, routine or whatever, and Kirk just walks out of the turbo lift with that cup with the insignia on it, That was such a merch plug. I was like,
I noticed that.
Yo, if they don't make a cup like that and start selling it immediately, someone messed up. Someone messed up in the merch department, because like that was such a like merch plug. I was like, what? I'm pretty sure a lot of people are gonna want that cup now. So
no, yeah, I definitely was like, this is like a big commercial advertisement.
Well, it's just that one cup. I don't think we got ever. Else. Although I did notice that Scotty was still wearing his insignia ring, which I know you can buy from like a specific website, which I could maybe link to in the show notes if you wanted to buy really said must. Insignia ring from official retailer. I sound like such a merch person right now. Oh, God.
They aren't even giving us money. So
Maybe I won't put the link in. Maybe you just have to go look for it on your own.
If you go into the unknown. $10,000, we will plug the heck out of you.
Yeah. I don't know. I think more than anything, I was super impressed with like the themes and the, I guess, grown-upness of this film compared to the other ones, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I think thematically, it was good. And even though it wasn't as maybe entertaining, I thought the writing was
fairly solid.
Minus consistent. The villain stuff.
Character-based. It was great.
Yeah. Overall, good film.
Good
and
film.
And hopefully, if you listen to this whole podcast, you have hopefully decided to see it. But
I would assume
that they've it. I guess if you decided you don't like it, then you would have tuned out like about like 2 hours ago. So, anyway, it should still be in theaters by the time we release this episode, so you should probably go see it. I recommend.
Again, go see it again.
Go see it again, guys, like me. See it 2, 3, 5, 7 times. I don't know if I'm going to see it again, but it was going to have to merit two watches.
Only prime number of times.
Huh?
You can only see it a prime number of times.
I don't know, man. Just watch it 2, 3, 5, 7 feel right. No, it's a lie. I saw it twice. Yeah, I don't know how many times I saw the first one in theaters, but I definitely saw that like at least 3 or 4 times in theaters or something like that. No, probably three times I saw it. Yeah, that sounds about right.
The most times I've ever seen anything in theaters is the first Avengers film, and that was 3 times. Oh. Fun fact.
I thought you had seen TFA more.
No, I only saw that twice in theaters.
Yeah, it's just really funny. I'll wrap this up soon, but like, that when we were deciding to see what movie back in 2009, I really wanted to watch Up. Like, I didn't care about Star Trek at all, and I was pretty pissed that we didn't get to see Up. So like, I was just like, whatever, Star Trek, whatever. And then once like the first 10 minutes happened, I was like tears were streaming down my face, and I'm like, I'm sold, guys. Like,
I'm aboard this hell ship.
Like, I will go down with this ship, the Kelvin or whatever it was. Anyway, so yeah, go see Star Trek. It's everything you want. It's POC in sci-fi. It's POC writing sci-fi. It's POC directing sci-fi. Go see the dang thing. It has like the trifecta, and I'm not just referring to like Spock, Bones, and Kirk. Like, we have a trifecta of POC in writing, directing, and acting. So I don't know. That's pretty cool. You don't get that much. You should totally watch it.
Okay.
That's just my thing, man. I guess you could just go watch the 2009 film too, if that's your speed. By now we probably spoiled the entire movie for you, so
I'm sure everyone has already seen it.
Yeah, it's been a while. All right.
So I think that's about it.
I guess our next episodes will be more Sense8 episodes. And then, yeah, we'll keep to our schedule of, you know, 2 TV episodes and then doing a movie. And we'll see you later. Bye. Live long and prosper.
Bye-bye.